Some events can be identified just by dates: July 4th, December 7th, September 11th. There are also turns in U.S. history you can trace back to seasons and places. Detroit, fall 1913, Henry Ford begins the assembly line. Summer 1848, Seneca Falls, New York, Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton organize for women's rights. Spring 1886, Atlanta, John Doc Timberton concocts the first Coca-Cola at his pharmacy. And Chicago, fall 1953, Hugh Hefner puts out the first Playboy magazine.
In a large measure, in terms of things social and sexual, we live in a Playboy world today.
Hugh Hefner is now 77 and still receives guests in his working clothes, black silk pajamas and a red velvet smoking jacket. In 1953, Mr. Hefner was a 27-year-old freelance cartoonist who pasted up the first issue of Playboy on the same kitchen table of his Southside apartment on which his daughter Christy had her diapers changed, in a time when most men's magazines seemed to feature articles about buck hunting and fishing lures. Mr. Hefner said he wanted to create a magazine that reveled in indoor pursuits.
It was a response to Puritan repression. It was saying quite simply that life is more than a veil of tears, that life should be celebrated, that we should be living not simply for tomorrow, but for today as well, and that there is nothing suspect about pleasure per se, and that includes sexual.
That first issue had no date on the cover, which was a picture of a then-unknown Marilyn Monroe. Mr. Hefner wasn't sure there would be a second issue of Playboy. He wanted any vendors who sold the magazine to be able to keep it on their shelves for months. Christy Hefner, who is now the company's president and chief executive officer, keeps one of those first copies in her office in Chicago and says it looks like the kind of magazine a young man pasted up on his kitchen table.
But the idea was there, the idea of a magazine that would paint the picture of a more entertaining, romantic life for a generation of men who had come back from World War II, were going to college in record numbers, and started to envision the possibilities of a life that was different and richer than what their fathers had lived.
Over the past 50 years, Playboy has boomed, faded, and finally become a durable survivor in American publishing. It is a corporate name like Disney, IBM, or Coca-Cola that's identified with a whole culture. People who may have had little feeling for Playboy's content, including Betty Friedan, Anita Bryant, Malcolm X, and Jimmy Carter, have done extended interviews for the magazine because they wanted to reach its audience. For 50 years, Hugh Hefner has managed to stay not only rich and famous, but controversial. We told him that many National Public Radio listeners who hear his voice today may hurry to send us emails asking, why are you interviewing a man who has exploited and demeaned women?
A person's perception of my life, of me, and of the magazine is very much an inkblot test. There's a tremendous amount of projection going on here. In other words, what people see is a little bit of what I'm really all about and a great deal of what a person's own particular dreams, fantasies, and prejudices are about.
I should explain that Hugh Hefner knew my father and drew him in his 1951 book of Chicago cartoons, That Toddlin' Town. Mr. Hefner received us in the Playboy Mansion West in Holmby Hills, California. He's lived there in persistently publicized opulence for most of the past 25 years. The Chicago mansion, in which he edited the early Playboy in marathon sessions from his round bed, fueled by Pepsis and his pipe, is now housing for art students. There are scores of glorious birds on Mr. Hefner's California estate, including parrots, toucans, and peacocks, and fenced-in trees crawling with cute, cunning monkeys. There is the Hollywood issue tennis courts, and perhaps the property's most famous feature, an underground stone grotto that feeds Mr. Hefner's swimming pool. Mr. Hefner has thrown many legendary parties over the years. A good many famous fannies have reportedly gotten puckered in that grotto.
Hi, I'm Holly Madison. I'm 23 years old. I'm Hef's girlfriend. I've lived at the mansion for 2 years, and I'm going to show you guys around.
The mansion is classically furnished with expensive good taste. There are erotic artworks, but they include drawings by Picasso, Monet, and John Lennon. After all, Hugh Hefner was once a cartoonist. He admires a clean line. But some parts of the mansion seem preserved from the 1970s. Playboy circulation was at its high of over 7 million, and the Times seemed in tune.
And this one back here, the floor is a mattress, so you can use your imagination as to
what?
A mattress.
Oh, and so what is this room called?
The van room, because it looks like the old vans from the 70s when they changed them and turned them into little bedrooms.
Oh, I see.
So we've got a little shower back there.
It is irresistible to point out. In fact, Holly Madison's tank top and shorts were arrayed to feature a pink Playboy bunny emblem tattooed under her tailbone. Mr. Hefner spoke with us in his library, which has the serious red leather look of heavy chairs and burnished bound volumes, but it is not Alistair Cook's old set on Masterpiece Theatre. The library also features a full-color and detailed bust of one of Mr. Hefner's previous companions, Barbie Benton. Hugh Hefner and Playboy's editors like to note their literary history. They have published stories from highly esteemed authors, including Nabokov, Hemingway, Norman Mailer, and Susan Sontag. But not even Playboy's editors claim that literary quality alone propelled Playboy's success. Literary critic Benjamin DeMott once memorably called the magazine the whole man reduced to his private parts. The most famous section of Playboy remains the centerfold. What would dorm rooms and high school boys' lockers look like without the centerfold?
See, historically, pinup photography and pinup art had been glamorous and kind of Hollywood-connected. And what I wanted to try to create was a pinup phenomenon that was devoted to the girl next door, the notion that beauty was everywhere, on the college campuses, in your office, living next door to you. Our first Playmate of the Month that was a girl next door actually was Janet Pilgrim, who actually worked for the magazine. She was a secretary and subscription manager. It caused a sensation. And there was also a hidden message in it, because historically, pinup photography had been shot by and large in abstract situations or against studio walls or as an art study. We put the Playmates in a more natural kind of setting, sometimes with the presence of a man suggested, with the presence of a pipe or a tie or something in the picture. And with that little detail, what we were saying was, nice girls like sex, too. Sex is a natural part of life. Don't be ashamed of it.
Today, those early centerfolds seem more peekaboo than appalling. The women were strategically draped with sheets and scarves, like fan dancers, and they were always alone. Today, nudity and vividly simulated sex are selling points in popular primetime entertainments. But it's Hugh Hefner and his magazine, not Sarah Jessica Parker and Sex in the City, who remain a red flag.
I recognize that I remain even after half a century, a controversial figure. But America has always had conflicts related to things related to sex. In other words, we remain essentially a very Puritan people. It was Puritans who arrived on the Mayflower, and they came over from England because they were trying to escape from religious persecution, and the first thing they did was turn around and persecute the people who didn't agree with them.
I think for a lot of our listeners,
that we're talking about a person who, as you say, you may have listeners out there who are rushing to their internet to send an email letter, but at the same time, with a great many other people, both men and women, and a lot of the younger generation, I'm the king of the world.
I think there are a lot of our listeners would say, look, I'm not hung up about sex. I think it's great. I'm not a Puritan. I just think what they do in Playboy makes objects of women.
Well, I think you ought to talk to the women who've been in the magazine and see how they feel about that. I mean, what is more Puritan than somebody who has a strong opinion about somebody else's life and who disapproves of it because somehow or other it's not their particular way?
Christy Hefner says she also does not believe that the publication she and her father produce exploits women.
And I frankly think if you think it does, I would ask you, what is your image of what an attractive, sexy woman should be presented as that wouldn't do that? I think objectification is kind of a funny word. I mean, by its nature, photography is two-dimensional. By its nature, if you're painting or photographing or even sculpting someone, you're not presenting their humanity, you're presenting an image. Now, the image can be beautiful or the image can be ugly, but that is what photography and art and film are. So if you want to reduce the magazine to its center three pages, then in effect you've objectified the magazine as much as anything else.
In fact, for most of the 1950s and 60s, Hugh Hefner and Playboy were considered avant-garde figures. Bold, not chauvinist. Naughty, but liberated. Playboy's interviews with Malcolm X, by Alex Haley, became the foundation for Malcolm's famous autobiography. Mr. Hefner made Dick Gregory the house comic at the Chicago Playboy Club. His act was as much social commentary as comedy. Cy Coleman wrote this jazz theme to salute Playboy, and Mr. Hefner promoted and championed Lenny Bruce.
And we ran the first national profile on Lenny, and Lenny became a very close friend. And when he was arrested for obscenity in December of 1962, I gave him my lawyer and one of my neckties, because he didn't own a tie, and defended him.
Playboy began to decline by the late 1970s. Success inspired imitators who put more spice, or schmutz, into the Playboy formula. Bob Guccione's Penthouse, imported from Great Britain, was more explicit. Larry Flynt's Hustler, which he founded in Columbus, Ohio, was explicit to the point of course, and extremely successful. Erotic videos cut into Playboy's circulation even before websites made erotica more private. The magazine that was once an empire had to shed many of its possessions, the Playboy clubs, casinos, and Mr. Hefner's bunny-emblazoned passenger jet. But that was business. There seems a tinge of personal bitterness in Hugh Hefner's voice when he recounts the feminist criticism that undercut his magazine's liberal reputation.
That was very difficult for me. Having fought the good fight for women's rights, I felt that I was being turned on by, you know, people that are very close to me. But I think it isn't a coincidence, historically, that when women got the vote in 1920, we also got prohibition. Those movements kind of went hand in hand. It's quite understandable, and it took me a while to really understand what it was really all about, because the truth of the matter is, of course there's going to be a certain amount of Puritan repression within the women's movement, because it's part of what America's all about.
Mr. Hefner believes that he has materially supported causes, including feminist interests, that his critics do not recognize.
We funded a number of the early cases in birth control cases and abortion cases. We were the amicus curiae in Roe versus Wade. Playboy, as much as anybody, gave women the right to choose. We got a couple of guys out of prison, one for having oral sex, and heterosexual, by the way, and What we tried to support were, and a lot of them had to do with sexual areas that were not being funded by other foundations. We supplied the major funding for Masters and Johnson in the 1960s that did the first serious studies of sexual physiology. We also supplied money with the Kinsey Institute. My view in terms of sexuality is the more you know about it, the better it's going to be for everybody. Sex education is rooted in knowledge, and why should sex be the one area of human activity that we don't want to know about? I mean, I think that's where the real hurt and harm comes from, ignorance.
We asked Mr. Hefner if two generations of sexual freedom hasn't cost society something, in encouraging divorce, disease, or the kind of casual, thoughtless sex that can be exploitative or hurtful.
Part of the sexual revolution was trying to bring some rationality to sexuality, and that means sometimes it's within the bounds of marriage, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's heterosexual, sometimes it's homosexual. But it should be done in an enlightened way, and it should be done not in secrecy. The most hurtful period in terms of sexuality in America, I think, was the Victorian era, when you had child slavery and all manner of deviation, because when you don't embrace sexuality in a normal kind of way, you get the twisted kinds, and the kinds that destroy lives.
In recent years, Hugh Hefner has been able to see the enterprise that bears his bunny print renew itself under his daughter's leadership. Playboy clubs are gone, but the Playboy emblem on clothing and products is popular, especially in China, where the magazine cannot be sold. Playboy's circulation has stabilized at 3.2 million. That's less than half of what it was in 1972, but it's about the same as Time and Newsweek, about three times the circulation of Rolling Stone, Men's Health, or Vanity Fair, and a million more than Martha Stewart Living. Penthouse, meanwhile, has sued for bankruptcy protection. Hugh Hefner is still a vigorous-looking man in his black silk PJs and plush red smoking jacket, although he no longer smokes a pipe. He is slightly stooped by his years, but with a seamless California complexion. Mr. Hefner personally chooses each Playboy cover and centerfold and maintains the magazine's image in his mansion, where Holly Madison is a kind of girlfriend-in-chief of his estate at Playboy West.
Oh, there's so many people staying here. I mean, Hef lives here all the time, of course, and then he has about 7 girlfriends usually. And we always have girls come out, you know, to shoot Playmate and to work for Playboy in any different capacity, staying out in the guest house. So it's pretty busy, but it's fun that way. The more the merrier.
I tried the more traditional way. I've been married twice. I paid an emotional price for it. I have less conflict and emotional turmoil in my life now with 7 girlfriends that I did when I was married.
Let me put it to you this way. The French have a phrase for it, psychology for dogs. Their psychology for dogs on you would be, well, he has the 7 women in his life now because he still hungers for the one. He is still lonely for the one who will share his life.
I can't fault that thought. I think that, quite frankly, I'm a romantic. And romance is an illusion to some extent. But in the process, I've also managed to live a really quite wonderful life and have found more real happiness and satisfaction for myself and those around me than most people that I know, and certainly more than my parents.
How is romance an illusion?
Well, it's something we invented. I mean, sex was handed to us by the powers that be, but romance is something that we invented, that is unique to humankind. And what's interesting about the Western romantic tradition, of course, is that some of the classics are, you know, Romeo and Juliet, where everybody dies. I mean, there are a few little details that we haven't quite worked out in terms of all of this. In the fairy tales, it's pursuit, and then they lived happily ever after. But we never really deal with they lived happily ever after.
Hugh Hefner, speaking with us in his mansion, Playboy West in Holmby Hills, California. You can find more in our story about Hugh Hefner and Playboy's 50th anniversary, including pictures, but no, not those kinds of pictures, on our website, npr.org.